there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Welcome to the show today. So I am super excited to introduce my featured guest, Nancy Addison, today, because even though we've just been chatting for a little bit in the pre-chat, I feel like I've made a just brand new friend that may be moving to Montana even, so I'll get to meet her in person. And I found her because she has a website, she's written lots of books, and she has a radio show called Organic Healthy Life. And so she's got some great books about cooking and eating healthy. And so here today to talk to us is Nancy Addison. So welcome to the show, Nancy.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is such a pleasure.
Well, thank you. And so I'm super excited because I try to eat really healthy, but truth be told, I really struggle with it. And I'm not quite a vegetarian. I guess I'm what, I don't know, some people maybe call it fishitarian. Fish is kind of my compromise with my husband, even though we don't eat a lot of it. And mostly I try to stick to salmon because the salmon, you know, when they run in the fall, they're just like laying on the side of the thing. You know, they're not going to last much longer. I mean, they come up, they spawn, and they die. So I don't feel guilty eating salmon, but pretty much I stick to it. And then I'm a big egg eater, but, and dairy, but kind of like I stay away from, like, you know, chicken and meats and those kind of things. But I still really struggle to eat super healthy, even though, like, in the summer it's easier when Mike's got the big garden. But so I'm super excited to hear about, you've got a book called Diabetes and Your Diet, and then How to Be a Healthy Vegetarian.
Yes. And some other Raising books, right? Healthy Children. Yes. Raising Healthy Children and Diabetes and Your Diet just won, were winners in the International Books Award. For one was for the best health book of the year, and the other was best parenting book of the year. And then my vegetarian book was a runner-up to my diabetes book. So, they're all half cookbooks, but they also include a lot of information on nutrition and health and supplements, vitamins, cleansing. But I also weave all kinds of information in there on quality of food. And I think, you know, that's basically what I think is so critically important for our health. It's not necessarily the food you eat, but the quality of that food that you eat. And so one of the passionate things in all of this for me is the quality of our lives, our environment, our food, and that is really organic, in my opinion. And I think that is one of the most important things that I stress to people, is that the organic food's going to have more nutrients in it. It's going to be food that it has not been contaminated, hopefully, with glyphosate or chemical fertilizers and pesticides. Any kind of poison, like a neonicotinoid poison. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I just heard on the news the other day that California, I can't remember if it was California, the whole state, or like San Diego, or like somewhere, but they declared glyphosate like a toxin. They were like, it's linked to, is it linked to cancer? But it was linked. They were
absolutely.
This is a toxic chemical, and we are not putting it, like, you know, we don't want it on our lawns anymore. And I think they won a, I shouldn't be spouting news that I don't know off. Here I am, alternative facts. No, but I know I saw it on the news that California was like,
well, it's not just California. In fact, the World Court in The Hague had a 5-judge tribunal that came, had a trial really basically on Monsanto, and found them guilty against crimes against humanity and the environment. And many of these chemical fertilizers and pesticides, especially the glyphosate that they use, has been a known carcinogen for a very long time. In fact, in the New York Times, really very recently, they had a court had, so many people are suing Monsanto because they have cancer. And so the courts have subpoenaed documents from Monsanto, and they found that many of the studies that Monsanto had given the EPA were actually ghostwritten.
How does that work?
Well, it means that they weren't, you know, you have to, yeah, I haven't seen the documents specifically, but when you have somebody ghostwrite something, it means somebody's writing something that, you know, they're just writing for you. So right. if you look at that, you know, terminology right there, it would lead you to think that they made up their studies. In fact, that what was coming out is they've actually known since for many, many, many years that glyphosate does cause cancer, and that they were doing all kinds of things to prevent people from finding that out. And what the New York Times article was saying was that apparently the EPA was aware of all of this and just went along with it. And then, of course, Europe has known this for a long time, and they've banned it. And they've banned many of the GMOs, and they, of course, make them label things over in Europe. And I do think it's only a matter of time before these chemicals are going to, hopefully be outlawed. One of the things that I find so upsetting really about the quality of our food is the fact that the way so many of these farmers are raising the food, and I'm really not blaming the farmers, because I think many of them have been misled with misinformation and also with really tough laws by the USDA that require certain things, and I think many of them don't know because of the misinformation, how to change or do better. But these chemical fertilizers and pesticides are just, you know, saturating our country, and I think destroying our groundwater and poisoning the ground, also the wildlife. And then a lot of these GMOs are spreading and interbreeding with wild plants, and we really need to stop this. And in fact, I have a petition right now. I have almost 200,000 signatures. Oh. I'm trying to ban the manufacturing and use of the neonicotinoid poisons, which they coat a lot of seeds with, that have just been decimating our land, our groundwater, and especially the pollinators in particular, the bees. It's very hard for them to find out just how many have been decimated by this, but even the federal courts have come out and said the EPA has been wrong not to outlaw them, and that it would be very beneficial for everyone to outlaw them. So I do think things are moving in that direction. I want to give, you know, everybody the, you know, the positive look at this is, you know, the courts are ruling against these companies, and they are finding out, you know, more and more of the truth, and we have to, you know, take that and go, yes, and we know that things are moving forward. And I think people are demanding more ethical behavior from companies, and as the courts discover all of these things that have been covered up or that have been causing ill health, I do think the earth is a very healing place, and it can reverse that. It is just incredible how it can heal itself, and we just have to believe that that can happen, and then also at the same time support those farmers that are actually using organic, non-toxic growing practices, and support them so that they can, you know, continue doing what they're doing. And I do think that's the direction we're moving in.
I agree. And I think it's because awesome moms like you raise awesome children who are millennials these days. And my listeners know I'm always raving about the millennials. But it's true. The millennials do. And they want businesses that have ethical practices. And I think a lot of what you're saying about the farmers is very true, that they don't necessarily want to do it either. They're forced into that either by the USDA or also the banks. You know, a lot of my guests have talked about, you know, if you want to get a bank loan or you want to get crop insurance, you have to follow these certain practices. And you know, I think that, so I think that's changing, like you said, as we get more educated and learn things about them. I did find on CNN's website really quickly, so it was just June 29th, so what was that, Thursday, yesterday, yeah, they said one of the most popular herbicides in the world can cause cancer. California health officials say the herbicide glyphosate will be added to California's list of chemicals that causes cancer from the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. So I knew I had just heard it on the news. I just wanted to put that in there so I'm not spouting alternative facts. That's from CNN. You can take it or leave it from there. But I think most of my listeners, and like you and I, you know, we know a lot of where it's coming from. And like the biggest thing I learned from my podcast that I hadn't really thought about, because my mom never used, you know, any kind of, you know, she always made sure her lawn, and I remember her talking to the neighbors a lot about, please don't spray your dandelions and things with your, you know, pesticides on the block. Cause it's because what people don't realize is who's closest to the grass on the lawn. Pets,
your babies,
and your babies learning to crawl, your little toddlers, the little kids. And then, you know, a little kid soaking up more of that, their bodies are tinier than an adult. And so those were like, you know, some big lessons that I really like have hit home that people should think about. You know, I never really paid attention because, you know, we never did it. And my mom, you know, I grew up, but so many people don't realize, you know, when a lot of people like where I grew up, you know, they just have a landscaper. They don't even pay attention to what happens. So hopefully, and I have been thinking, like, what we need is a course for landscapers to learn, and what other options do they have? And certainly landscapers have options to building compost because they're collecting all the grass clippings. And to me, that works for us really good to make. I mean, we can make, turn a batch of compost in like 2 weeks at my house when we're cutting the lawn in the summer. So
yeah. Oh, what a great thing to do. Well, and people don't realize that these pesticides that they are spraying on their lawn, those will go straight to your skin, straight to your bloodstream without being diffused by your organs like food does. So it goes like straight into your bloodstream and it can cause severe nerve damage. And so you think about your animals and the rate of disease for animals today and the rate of disease in the U.S. today. I mean, half the people in the U.S. today have chronic disease, and the pets are right there with them. And I just see a correlation between that and the use of all these toxins in our environment, especially these that, you know, they spray on, around our environment, like in our parks, you know, and we think going out in the park or in the yard is going to be healthy. But if it's sprayed with all these toxic poisons that are, you know, going straight to your bloodstream, it can affect you otherwise. And, you know, you think about who would invent a toxic poison to annihilate one of the healthiest plants there is that you could, you know, harvest and eat. I mean, if people just harvested their dandelions instead of trying to kill them and they just put them in their salads, they, you know, they'd be so much healthier, because dandelion greens, they actually sell them for a lot of money at the grocery store, but they are so good for your health and your well-being and your liver. So it just, you know, it's like they've invented now a new toxin to annihilate milkweed, which is the favorite food of monarch butterflies. And you're just thinking, what kind of scientist sits around and says, okay, let's create a poison to kill like the easiest, healthiest food people can grow and the prettiest little creatures on earth. You know, it's like, what? What planet are you from? Yeah, I want to have butterflies and bees in my environment, and I want to be able to go sit in a park without getting nerve damage. And, you know, I always thought God made everything perfectly, and, you know, what in the world are they inventing all of these things that are going to destroy it for? And what people don't realize is when they invent these toxins, they are not doing environmental impact studies on them. I actually was married to an environmental trial lawyer for 23 years, and I learned so much about air quality and water quality and farm toxicity and farm runoff and electromagnetic fields and different laws. And I also studied landscape architecture at Texas A&M for a short while. And the landscape people really are not taught. They, you know, take some environmental sciences, but they really don't do any environmental impact studies on, for instance, there's a rose that was developed called knockout roses, and these landscapers put them everywhere. And what people don't realize is these roses have no nectar in them. So, you know, I know you go to a florist or you go out in the garden and you expect a flower to have a fragrance. Well, when it doesn't have a fragrance, that means it doesn't have any nectar. And so what happened, and I learned this 28 years ago, it's just now becoming public knowledge, but the bumblebees, the big bumblebees, were going extinct because of these hybrid plants and the GMO plants that have no nectar in the flower. They were quite literally starving to death. And, you know, we look at the decline of the butterflies and the pollinators, and it's directly correlated to these toxins in that, like the neonicotinoid poisons in the plants, but also the GMO plants in hybrid plants that have no nectar in the flower. And so, you know, one of the things that I really do talk about in my books is, you know, if you're going to plant a garden or if you're going to buy, you know, things, you know, make sure they're heirloom or that they're organic and that they have a fragrance and that you're supporting this because, you know, our web of life depends on this, and it's critical. And, you know, it's something that, you know, and I hope my radio show and your radio show and my books and things can, you know, help educate more and more people so that they're more aware, because the more people that become aware of these things, the more they can make better choices and, you know, choose a rose for their garden that does have a nectar and a fragrance instead of something like the knockout roses that are, you know, really not good for the environment and not good for the pollinators in particular, especially the butterflies.
Wow. All right. Well, that's good to know. And I think, you know, that's for sure. Education is the key. I mean, that's part of why I became a teacher.
It's really quite remarkable. But yeah, we have to educate ourselves and look out for ourselves. And I think in Europe, people actually hold their government more accountable and demand better government that does protect their health. And I think in America, people tend to be afraid to do that. And we need to really, truly let our voices be heard. Otherwise, they assume we don't care. And we do need to monitor what they're doing, because otherwise, you know, how do we know if they have made some choices that are not good for our health and not good for the environment? And we need to just, you know, demand more better representation. I think so many times, and this has happened frequently, is they'll take, you know, people who are on boards of chemical companies will get jobs with the government, and they'll start making regulations that benefit them and not necessarily the population on a whole. And you see, I've seen that time and time again, and they start watering down the laws and the restrictions that do protect the environment and the butterflies and the bees and us. And I think I see a big wave of change coming, and I thank God for a lot of these millennials who are not putting up with that and are starting to, you know, be more vocal and take action. And I do see changes happening, and it is incredibly hopeful and exciting. I think we are living in an exciting time of great change for the better. And, you know, having the World Court rule against Monsanto was, I think, very impressive. And, you know, I know Europe has banned GMOs in many, many regions and demand labeling, and they've outlawed a lot of the toxic chemicals. And I think we're right behind them. You know, I think we've been too slow to get there, but I think it's coming. So, hooray.
All right. Well, I like your optimism, and let's hope so. So, you know, we haven't even started out with, like, do you want to tell us about your very first gardening experience? I kind of always start the show usually there, like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? What'd you grow? Like, who were you with? Like, what was your very first? Did you grow up in Texas?
I did. You know, it's funny. I think I was just born up, you know, like a little kind of farmer kind of person. My parents loved to garden, and I grew up on a pretty big, we had a half acre lot that our house was on, and we always had a garden. In fact, up until 1947, everybody had gardens in their yard. It was only after World War II when people really kind of stopped having them quite so much. But we had a huge garden, and then I guess around the age of 6 or 7, we bought a farm. And my father, he was a lawyer, but in all of his spare time when he was not at the office, especially on weekends, he was out planting fruit trees or different kinds of heirloom plants. And part of our chores as a child was, you know, helping in the garden on Saturday, you know, pulling weeds or harvesting or planting. And I learned so much. And I was also, I'm a certified licensed wildlife rehabilitator, and so I was very much connected with animals. And I had a great aunt that always gave us baby chicks and baby rabbits and things for Easter, and so we kept all of those. We always had ducks or chickens and things in the backyard, and then from the farm, if an animal was hurt, I was always rehabilitating them, like a gopher. I had a possum I was rehabbing when I was small, and so I've always been very much connected with the earth. I think my grandmother said, Nancy, you know, if I ever need to find you, it's going to be out in the garden. And my grandmother was a very avid gardener as well. And so I grew up in a family that loved being outdoors with the environment. And my mother always had a huge flower garden with fragrant roses and 4 o'clocks and sunflowers and things like that. And so I have a real love for the fragrances of the garden and all the little creatures that live there. And there's just nothing better than the fresh food right out of your garden. And I would love to see us all get more back to that kind of way of life. And I think we can. I think it's a choice. And I've even been really trying to reach people who are more inner city urban dwellers. And my daughter's living in New York, and I've been working with a woman up there who's a spokeswoman for the Latino community. And I've, you know, been to some farmers markets, fundraisers for her, and they're trying to get, you know, more people in these urban inner city areas where it's kind of a food desert to be able to have farmers markets. And I've been trying to teach people how to grow, you know, even if they're just growing microgreens or sprouts on their balcony or in their windowsill, you know, you can actually, you know, grow some fresh food really no matter where you are. And it's such a joy. And it, you know, it's just, I think of my plants really as kind of some of my pets, because, you know, I'm actually really connected with them. And take care of them like they're, you know, my pets. They're living beings. One of my favorite books I ever read was The Secret Life of Plants. It is out of print, but it changed my life and really made me look at the way life is on a whole different spectrum. And it's all scientifically based. It was written back in the 1970s, but some scientist, I want to say he was like, I don't know if he was, what kind of scientist he was, but he was bored one day and he started putting some like sensors in his plants, kind of as just, you know, to pass the time. And he started finding out all these amazing things about his plants. And he started doing more and more studies and more and more studies. And this book kind of documents what he found out. And I know Russia took it from at one point and just went, you know, wild with this whole idea that plants are so completely aware of everything, as much as maybe even your pets are. And yet they don't have a face. They don't have eyes. They don't have ears. But they are completely connected with us in so many ways. And it really just changed my life. And so I highly recommend that book to anybody who loves to read that kind of thing.
Okay. Do you want to talk about growing microgreens and sprouts? Like, how do you grow microgreens on your windowsill?
Oh my gosh, it's so easy. And if you have access to being able to purchase some organic dirt, you know, I think that is really awesome, because I think the quality of the soil is so paramount to the quality of our food. And so if you want your food to have, you know, a lot of nutrients in it, then your soil needs to have that as well. And so just for example, you know, you can order some organic seeds or heirloom seeds, and you can get such a variety at different seed places. Seeds of Change is one of my favorite places to order my organic seeds. But you can also, you know, save your seeds. And when you save your seeds, you can, you know, replant them. But just for instance, I love to grow microgreens because they're a little bit bigger than a sprout, but they have a concentration of compounds in them that would be like in the whole plant. So someone who needs intense nutrition, and especially from vegetables and greens, which are so good for us, growing just sprouts is so, so easy. I actually have directions for that in my book, How to Be a Healthy Vegetarian, because I think sprouts and microgreens are so easy to grow and so nutrient dense that they can really help anybody with their health and well-being. But what you do is you just take your seeds and soak them in non-chlorinated water, you know, overnight. And then I like to plant them in, you know, like my organic soil. Or if you just want to sprout them, all you have to do is put them in like a sieve, and then I set it in a bowl so it won't get my counter wet. And then I put a towel over that to make it feel more like it's in the ground and it's, you know, underneath the soil. Oh. And then with your microgreens, you just put them in your dirt, and you put a small layer of the organic soil over it. And then you want to water it with non-chlorinated water. And you want to do this because you don't want the chlorine in your soil or the fluoride from the water. And those are carcinogenic. So the chlorine was the first poison developed to kill people in warfare. And so you definitely want to keep that out of your garden water. And so you can get a thing for your hose at the RV department at a store, and you just screw it on your hose, and it will remove the chlorine. I don't know how much of the fluoride it will remove, but it will remove the chlorine or most of the chlorine. And that's pretty inexpensive way to do that. If you're in your house, you know, I use a zero water filter, and that will remove the chlorine and the fluoride. And you can use that to use for cooking or for your water. And that's actually a pretty inexpensive filter, but it's a very good one. You can get it at Bed Bath & Beyond or Target. They're about $40. And then you just replace the filter as necessary. And it even comes with a little thing that tells you when to replace it. But I soak my seeds. Then I put them in the sieve for the sprouts or in the soil for the microgreens. And then I just water it a couple of times a day. You want to keep it damp until you start seeing a sprout. So I water it about three times a day. And you want to make sure it's somewhere where it's not going to ruin what it's sitting on. So sometimes I'll just put it over the sink while I'm watering it, and I have it in like a big tray. And then when it starts sprouting, you can put it in the sunlight, and it will start developing that beautiful chlorophyll. And the antioxidants that we hear about are actually the color pigment. So you want this wonderful green chlorophyll. And so after it gets, you know, maybe about, I mean, anywhere up to, you know, a small, you know, inch, 2 inches, you know, then you can harvest those and add them to your salads and to your sandwiches. And they're just absolutely delicious and fresh, and they're packed with nutrients. And of course, if you grow it yourself, you know the quality. And I think having control over that is always just one of the nicest things about that. But just for instance, there was a study published in 2010 by the Journal of the American Society for Horticulture Science, and they said that like young lettuce seedlings harvested 7 days after germination had the highest antioxidant capacity, as well as the highest concentration of health-promoting phenolic compounds compared to the more mature counterparts. So, you know, that means that these young little lettuce microgreens or sprouts are more nutrient dense than, you know, the full grown lettuces. So, you know, I'd like to encourage all of you gardeners out there to, you know, harvest your plants, some of them earlier than maybe you're used to, and eat them as, you know, little babies, and you'll get more nutrient density there. And I think it just tastes so fresh and wonderful. And for things like spinach, the baby spinaches don't have the oxalic acid that the full-grown spinach has. So, you know, that's a really good thing. So a lot of greens have certain components like that, that, you know, if you eat them as a baby green, they're much better for your health.
Wow. Well, that was a lot of information, but I love that because, well, for one thing, so actually my husband's really the gardener here, but this year, so I ran the garden club at my school with another teacher, and a lot of the stuff that we planted was in my windowsill in my classroom, and we had a class guinea pig, so we had two lettuce trays for the guinea pig that we would feed him out of, and it was just really interesting for me to do that and keep that alive. I don't know, just somehow, like, it empowered me, making me feel like, wow, I did a lot more to keep that stuff alive than I thought I did. And it was kind of like my biggest first success really growing food more. Like, I'm always kind of grow more of the flowers. Plus, my husband's here. He waters if I don't, and just, you know, make sure everything's surviving. So, you know, we grew a lot of food out of these two little trees of lettuce. You know, I mean, granted, it was just the guinea pig that we're feeding, but let me tell you, that guinea pig eats a lot of food. Oh, and that's what I was going to say about the dandelions. My kids at school, so we would pick like handfuls of dandelions for him every time we would come back this spring. And my kids were like, I want to try the dandelions. And I didn't let them try the ones that we were bringing him because there's a lot of dogs running wild where we are, and you never know where the dogs are going to go. And just, I just didn't feel safe letting them. I was like, I don't know, do that at home with your mom. But they were curious about it. They really wanted to try those dandelion leaves because they could not believe. I mean, this guinea pig could eat a lot of greens. And so, you know, but it's interesting that just like the shorter plants have a higher nutrient density then. So that's good to know that it doesn't take a lot. And then the more you cut it, the more it keeps growing and keeps producing. So I think that will encourage a lot of listeners to try that if they're in a like urban space or they don't feel like, or, you know, a lot of my guests are always like, start small. And like, you could start with just a little tree or two. I was even thinking that I might start some for the guinea pig because like, as it's starting to get hotter here in Montana and like the lettuce is starting to bolt outside, my spinach is all bolted already. My arugula has been gone for, I think, practically since before I got out of school, even. I barely got to eat that. And so I've been thinking I should just plant a little tray like those ones I had on my windowsill at school, and just I'm thinking I should keep them on my porch. Mike talks a lot about, you know, a lot of things like that, full hot sun, but some things kind of like that north where it's not quite so hot.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes you have to put up a shade cloth, or I've even seen people put umbrellas up.
But it's true. It's very true. Mike and I keep arguing about this big tree by his mini farm that he wants to cut down. And I'm like, you know, last August, the things that were in the shade of that big tree, I know. And it's like, you can really tell the difference in the plants. It's pretty funny where that tree was, where it was shading them. I have to say that the ones, they were definitely a lot smaller, the ones that were shaded. But then come August, those other plants were kind of happy to have that shade. So I don't know if he's cut it down or not. I know he wants to, really.
Oh, I love trees so much. It pains me to hear that.
Well, we have 20 acres of forest land. Like, he could cut it down, and like, I wouldn't even notice 2 days later. I know. I'm always like, what? You're going to cut that tree down? But I'm kind
of
getting
read the secret life of plants beforehand. Okay. He might change his mind.
Well, he's a logger at heart. There's nothing to, like, I don't know. But we have, I mean, we have, like I said, we have lots of trees. I mean, we had, when I first moved here, he used to have Christmas trees all the time, and he used to prune them. We haven't really, the natural tree market's kind of, Christmas tree kind of vanished, so about right when I got here, so he hasn't done it in years, but we have a lot of trees. There's no shortage of trees on our property.
I'm glad to hear that.
So it's just making room for some other little baby to grow taller. He's out there right now. It's kind of funny. He's like, am I going to bother you if I'm sawing while you're talking? I can see him out my window. He's cutting down trees and making, I mean, in some ways it like cleans the forest, and just they're so tight. If you don't get rid of some of those baby trees, the bigger they won't grow. I don't know. He's just always into trying to keep it healthy so that we don't have a forest fire. You got to do a little bit of that thinning, I guess. So
absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about eating as a vegetarian and your books?
Yes. Well, how to be a healthy vegetarian. Well, all of my books really have a lot of nutritional information on how to really restore your health, reverse disease, live as well as you possibly can. When I became a vegetarian about 28 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot of information out there, and there was a lot of false information out there. And I think people really just think, you know, if they cut out meat and dairy and things like that, that they're, you know, eating healthy. And so many foods on the market that are vegetarian aren't necessarily healthy. They may be packed with trans fat, or they may be refined. They may have, you know, a lot of sugar in them. And so what my books really do is, even if people don't want to be 100% vegetarian, a vegetarian diet will reverse diabetes, heart disease, most cancers, and really restore people's health. And I think over the years, people have just been eating more and more meat. I mean, people today eat a lot more meat than, say, our grandparents did. They maybe had it at dinner or on Sunday dinner, and they weren't eating it, you know, every single meal. But, you know, we've kind of been brainwashed by
the new commercial yesterday for some new hot dog, a pretzel hot dog roll with a hot dog in it, covered in bacon and cheese. Like, people don't even realize a lot of times that there's everything has bacon on it anymore, and just, yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of everywhere, and they've sanitized it to the point where people, you know, don't feel like they're responsible for, right, you know, so many animals' deaths and things. And really, the studies, and I'm certified in plant-based nutrition with Cornell, what the China study found, and that was a study done with T. Colin Campbell and Oxford University, and it was the most comprehensive nutritional study to date. And one of the things they found that was very, very clear was that when someone's diet gets over 10% of creature protein, and I say creature protein because that would include dairy and eggs, fish, chicken, beef, it all kind of was the same in this study, that when you got your diet over 10% of that, tumors form. And
ooh,
so
that's
you look
good
at.
To know.
You look at the U.S. today, and half the men in the U.S. today have cancer. One third of the women have cancer. You know, where is that correlation there? Well, you look at the rise in the amount of meat and creature protein that people are eating. Everybody's so obsessed with protein, and they don't realize that 45% of spinach is protein. You know, there's a lot of protein in non-creature food, and it's actually more bioavailable for the body than creature food is. Creature food has to be by the body turned into complex amino acids in order to be utilized. And with plants, the protein is already complex amino acids that's ready to be utilized. So, you know, there's you know, a lot more bioavailability of nutrients from plant-based foods. And so one of the things that I've found over the years is that, you know, people don't know how to eat vegetables in their whole real form. They kind of grew up on fast foods or processed foods. And I grew up in like the 60s where everybody was eating white refined everything. Everything was, you know, white refined, or it was, you know, had all the nutrients taken out of it, and then it was fortified with synthetic vitamins. And my research has found that the synthetic things are, you know, not good for you, and they can actually cause cancer. And what you want is you want food that's nutrient dense naturally. And that's what really feeds the body in a deep cellular way. And that's going to reverse disease and support your health. And really, I believe food is our medicine. And I think, you know, gardening and eating fresh food is truly such a wonderful, relaxing way to live our lives. And we've kind of gotten away from that. And, you know, even if you're an urban dweller, you can, you know, start your own little microgreen farm in your in a pot or in your windowsill, and really connect with that. But in my book, I talk about, you know, how do you eat healthier? I mean, really, you know, and how to choose food that's better for you, and how do you cook it, or do you cook it? You know, certain cruciferous vegetables need to be lightly steamed or sauteed or cooked in order to remove certain components that, you know, can hurt your thyroid. So, you know, I talk about the various vegetables that require that. And then also, most people don't realize that beans and lentils and things like that, that are seeds like quinoa or even rice, those are really seeds, and those have a phytic acid on them. And so I talk about ways to remove that phytic acid and the enzyme inhibitors so that you can digest that better, and it won't cause indigestion or gas. I think a lot of people are afraid of a vegetarian diet because they think it's going to cause them to have like gas, and they aren't going to digest their food properly. And it's really, it's not the food, it's the preparation. And I'm a chef, and I've studied different modes of cooking all over the world, including the Mediterranean. And what I realized is so many people don't know how to prepare their foods properly. And so they still have the phytic acid in it. They get indigestion and they can't, and it prevents them from absorbing other nutrients. And so all of these things are so easy if you know what to do or what to look for. And so my books, How to Be a Healthy Vegetarian, Diabetes in Your Diet, Raising Healthy Children, Lose Weight, Get Healthy, and Never Be on a Diet Again. And then my other book, Alive and Cooking, which I co-authored, will all walk you through different ways to prepare food easier and healthier and to absorb nutrients better, because the phytic acid on seeds like rice and lentils, beans, quinoa, things like that will prevent you from absorbing the nutrients and digesting that food. And I know acid indigestion is such a huge problem for people. And it's because of this. In fact, I was visiting a friend who has some horses, and she was saying her horses weren't feeling well. And I was like, well, are you just giving them like raw oats? I mean, these that you haven't like soaked them, you haven't removed the phytic acid, you haven't, you know, done anything to make that healthier for them. And so I told her, you know, what to do. And she started doing that and her horse's health just turned around and they started feeling better. But people don't realize that the biggest purchaser of antibiotics and acids in our country is farmers, because they are their animals are raised in such terrible diets and terrible conditions that they always have very bad acid indigestion, and the conditions are so bad that they have to give them the antibiotics just to keep them alive. So, you know, quality of food, even if you are consuming creatures, is really important. Supporting farmers that are raising animals in a humane, healthy way with fresh air and sunshine and free movement and a nice life. That food is such a totally different quality than food that is raised in inhumane given conditions that people don't realize that can change your health right there. Is, you know, quality, quality, quality. So support those farmers that are, you know, growing organically, not putting toxins on the environment, and being humane to their animals. And you know, I think the whole world benefits from that, and I think we're all connected, and I think it's very important to just be aware of a few of these things and, you know, take baby steps and move in that direction. And and I really do think we can make the world a better place.
Awesome. I think listeners are really going to relate to this because, well, for one thing, my second most downloaded episode was this woman, Kim Romelli, out of New Zealand. And she talked about cruelty-free living. And, you know, that it is so important. I think one of the things that people do struggle with, though, is the cost of eating. You know, because everybody says, even like your high-end, you know, I listen to a lot of business podcasts for some obscure reason. And like, even your people who have nothing to do with like the organic lifestyle or gardening or anything, all talk about, you know, the benefits of eating, you know, if they're going to be, have the energy up to be the CEO of some great business or whatever and go through what they need. They talk about the importance of eating healthy grass-fed beef and, you know, free range chickens and, you know, really paying attention to where your food comes from, just from like the energy standpoint, if they're going to, you know, go through their lives and work their hard days and do what they're going to do. But that, of course, you know, the cruelty free thing, you know, definitely interests me and is what I care about.
One of the things I think that is so important to be aware of is that what the quality of children's food is paramount. It's much more important than what we eat because their organs are still forming. And so even while the baby's in the womb, what the mother's eating, the quality of that food, whether it has carcinogenic things on it, like the glyphosate, is so much more critically important because it affects them much more drastically. And so the quality of their water, the quality of their food are really important. So, you know, watching out for that is vital. And I could really expand on this more and more and more, but I did put a lot of that in my book, Raising Healthy Children. So if anybody wanted to look into that, that would be a good place to start.
I know, and it's so true, like what we feed the kids in the cafeterias at school. And I do see a huge shift, like more schools like are having gardens. Like I know the schools around me didn't have gardens when, you know, 15 years ago, and now they all have greenhouses and gardens, and they're, you know, they're working at it very slowly, but it's definitely becoming more. But I even look at, like, they're serving the milk, they serve the 2% milk, because a lot of what I've learned on my show is that whole milk is actually better. And you know, we have this low-fat diet. Like I had the woman from the Weston A. Price Foundation came on and was talking about putting butter on your food. And I was just like, butter? I can't, like, for so long I've been eating vegetables without butter, thinking butter's bad for me. And then, you know, she talked about, well, the butter does some kind of chemical reaction with the food to make it healthier for you. So now I've been trying to, like, force myself to put butter on vegetables that I'm so used to eating with just salt and pepper and just naturally. And there's so much about nutrition, I think, that we don't know. That and that has changed over the years, and we think we're eating a healthier diet that not necessarily. And so anyway, but as a teacher, yeah, what the kids are eating is so important. I wanted to ask you about that in your book about the children's food.
Right. And it is critically important. And I think one of the reasons people should actually look at the full fat instead of buying ones that are low fat is when they take the fat out, it takes out the savory flavor. And then also they add a lot of sugar and refined salt and refined sugar and probably high fructose corn syrup to those products to try to make them taste better. So they're actually less good for you than the full fat versions. And it's not fat that makes us fat. It is the sugar that makes us fat. And so, you know, having a full fat version is usually healthier. And our brains work off of good fat. So it has to be a good fat. And so animal fat is not, you know, the fat that is going to be really good for you. And so, you know, in my book, I have huge fat chapters on what kind of fat to use. I think in the last 50 years, we were given a lot of misinformation from advertising and also, you know, being directed. I know when I grew up, our doctors were telling us to eat margarine, which is a trans fat, and using vegetable shortening like Crisco, which is a trans fat. And even in the tiniest amounts, those are terrible for us. And we should never eat those. So, you know, just being aware of which fat to use and things like that, I think it's better. I think if you're going to eat butter, be sure you're eating organic butter that is, you know, from humanely raised animals. And just, you know, really look at the quality of that. But I think, you know, fat gives us energy. It also is what tells our body how to use carbohydrates and proteins. So, you know, it's an important part of our diet. And so I really do believe in our food tasting good, but also being healthy. And I do think healthy eating can be delicious, but our taste buds acclimate to whatever we're eating. So if we want to, you know, change the way we're eating, if we do take that step and start eating something that's healthier for us, we've got to stick with it and our taste buds will adjust. And all of a sudden you'll find that that food really does taste good.
Absolutely. So do you want to tell listeners how they could come work with you in the pre-chat we were talking about? You said you were having, I was saying that I really wanted to come to one of your workshops. I was encouraging you to move to Montana and you were saying you're looking at land up here, but you said I should come to Nicaragua. You're going to have a workshop in Nicaragua. Tell us about that.
Oh, I have those a couple of times a year. I really love going down there because I have a friend who has a lovely home there, and we have very small, intimate retreats down there. And I just do a few cooking things throughout the week. I teach people, you know, how to prepare healthier food, and we talk about nutrition. And then at the same time, we're in an exotic place. It's beautiful land that is kind of, I want to say it's kind of like Cuba, because the Sandinista war kind of cut it off from the world, and it kind of, you know, stood still in time. And so there's ox carts on the roads, and the food that we get is really, really fresh. I don't think the big corporations went in there and, you know, planted, you know, the heavy toxic farms like they did everywhere else where they had access. And so like we have a American farmer actually near us that we get organic greens from, and we get fresh fruit from the local forests and the markets, and we eat really well. And then we have a wonderful adventure while we're there in this just really beautiful fresh environment, and her home overlooks the Pacific Ocean, so we swim and get really grounded and just work on really creating that mental peacefulness that is so important for having true health. And then also just learning a few ways that they can implement healthier ways of eating when they get back home, and maybe a lifestyle adjustments as well. And so it's just a, you know, a good way to kind of, sometimes when you want to make a change, it's good to kind of get out of your environment and go somewhere else. And it helps you look at it in a different way. And then also you can look back at your own life where you are living, and it gives you a different perspective. And it just allows you that, you know, little space and time to maybe make some adjustments and some changes. And I do various speaking engagements around the country. I'm a member of the National Speakers Association. I go all over the world. I've went to South Africa in January, and just had a great time visiting with some botanists and some organic gardeners there, and meeting some people that were doing recycling programs with really poor neighborhoods, and, you know, introducing some new ideas there. They have a terrible problem with Monsanto and the glyphosate. They're destroying the natural wild heirloom plants. And, you know, it's always interesting to connect with these people around the world. But I like to go places and speak on these different subjects and how people can connect and make a difference, and then also eat healthier foods and for their own health and their families and their friends. And yeah, I'd love to have you come on our Nicaraguan retreat. We have one in August. If you go to my website, organichealthylife.com, and might go to my retreat page, it tells you all about it. And we can also set up ones for different groups if they want to give us a certain date, and we can set those up. And it's a lovely place. It's in a deciduous forest, which is kind of unique because it has seasons. But her home is in the forest and also on the beach. And so you can wake up in the morning and there's monkeys in your tree, or it'll be full of parrots, or you know, a big iguana in the garden. And I've looked out from her house at the ocean before and seen a sea turtles. And another time I looked out and saw a whale. So it's, you know, you never know. And I love the wildness of it and just the incredible peace that brings. And and sharing my information with people. It's just one of my passions. And I really love helping people with their health and their nutrition. And it just is something that makes me happy.
So do you do like a health assessment of people? Did I see that where you had like a form that you filled in didn't I see that somewhere?
Yes, when I have some doctors and doctors groups that refer clients to me for health and nutrition counseling. And whenever I work with someone, and I get many many people who have very, very serious illnesses. I do like them to fill out a health history form for me. That kind of gives me an idea of who they are and what they're dealing with and what they've been doing. And then I'm very intuitive, and it's just a gift I have. And I, you know, just talking to people and working with them, I'm also certified in body-mind communication. So a lot of times our emotions or our illnesses can be affected by traumas in our lives. So, you know, I work very holistically. And so, you know, everything in our life affects our life and our health. And, you know, if somebody's had a trauma, like a child passing away or an accident or a divorce or a death in the family or something, you know, those can definitely cause health problems. But then, you know, I think serious health problems aren't usually caused by one thing alone. I think it's a combination of things. And so what I like to work with people is adjusting their diet, maybe their lifestyle, you know, looking at maybe any traumas that might have happened in the past. Hydration is a big one. I think most people really aren't hydrated properly, or they're drinking the wrong kind of fluids that are not hydrating them as well as possible. And so, you know, just kind of tweaking a few things and looking at where people are and what they can do to adjust that to, you know, change their environment and make it healthier. It's a lot easier than people think, but it's just a matter of like taking those steps and knowing what steps to take to get there. And, you know, what foods are better for them? And, you know, are you allergic to certain things? And, you know, what could have caused that? I mean, I think most people don't realize that antibiotics can eat holes in your stomach and cause all kinds of problems. Or the BT toxin that's built into all the corn and soy, that the genetically modified corn things that they're growing that are everywhere, they can eat holes in your stomach as well. The Monsanto and those companies said that to the EPA that it wouldn't, it would only eat holes in the stomach of the insects that were eating it. But the scientific studies and clinical trials have been coming back, especially from Canada, show very clearly it's eating holes in the stomach of people as well. And so that's just another reason to avoid GMO foods and eat more, you know, organic foods that are healthier for us. Because, you know, I think people, you know, it's, you know, they think it's expensive, but, you know, illness is way more expensive than eating healthy food. And so I think if you're going to, you know, your dollar is like a vote. If you're going to vote for the food that's, you know, going to be good for you, and the farmer that is doing the right thing and protecting the earth and the environment. And you know, try not to vote for the people who are, you know, planting seeds and things that are eating holes in our stomach or causing us to have cancer. And one reason those things have been cheap is because our government has used our tax dollars to supplement those farmers and those GMO foods. And they're just now, with very recently, started giving grants to organic farmers. So I do see in the future those prices coming down and it being more affordable for people. And I think that is wonderful. And it's moving in that direction. And with these courts ruling against these companies and finding that these things that they're using are causing disease and chronic illness, that, you know, things are going to start changing. But we really do need to use our dollars carefully and thoughtfully. And I think, you know, it's gonna all be much, much better. But if any of the listeners are having a struggle right now with some kind of chronic disease or a health problem, you know, I believe that you give the body the right tools, it really can do miraculous things. And I do think that, you know, everybody deserves radiant health.
Awesome. Well, I love this because my listeners know that anything that's easy is right up my alley, because I don't know, I work a lot and it's just hard, but I think you've like really encouraged people like that they can make simple changes that will, affect their lifestyle. And then I really like the way you say to support your, you know, your local farmer or somebody who's doing it correctly, because yeah, it does seem expensive. I just went to the grocery store 2 days ago and didn't buy any fruits or vegetables. The only thing I brought home were broccoli crowns. I was like, I can't afford this fruit, you know, $5 for a little, and I don't know what people with kids do sometimes, you know, for a little tiny basket of strawberries for the organic ones, but even the non-organic ones were like $4 for the strawberries and just blueberries, you know. Just, and I've met people, it seems like, in the grocery store a lot lately talking to me. They're like, oh yeah, I planted blueberry bushes because I love blueberries and they're just so expensive, and organic blueberries are really, you know, just, but it's true. If you support it with your dollars, you know, look at all, like I look at my cell phone and think, you know, 5 years ago, I couldn't even imagine having a smartphone, like the data plan seemed, but then after I got it, now I can't imagine living without a smartphone. So I think once you like, you know, bring it into your life slowly, try to make, you know, afford what you can afford. And just the more you support with your local dollars. The one thing I did want to touch on a tiny bit that you mentioned in the beginning was people who live in food deserts and just, you know, you look at the cost of food sometimes, like, and the cost of processed food, like you said, the government subsidized it because processed food definitely is a lot cheaper. And if you have family to feed and you, you know, for one thing, there's access to healthy food and farmers markets and things like that. And just food deserts in general. I mean, I've seen a lot of places here in Montana where there is no grocery store for miles from people's apartments. Like there's this one big intersection down in Kalispell, which is right by Flathead Lake that you were talking about. And there's a Costco, there's a natural health food store, but there, the giant high school is right there. I don't see the kids from the high school going to the natural grocer. I don't see them going to Costco. And then what else is there? There's, you know, all the fast food restaurants, McDonald's. They can walk right from the high school across the street to McDonald's. You know, there's a whole apartment complex there. There's the Forest Service, a giant Forest Service building full of employees. It's a busy intersection, you know, Home Depot's there. There's all these grocery stores. And then, you know, there's two, you know, there's like a town pump and a, you know, convenience stores full of, you know, sugary sodas, chips, like that's what's right there down there. And I didn't know if you wanted to touch on that at all.
Well, I think something people should be aware of is that these processed foods, many of them have the high fructose corn syrup in them. Well, and that could also have the BT toxin in it because it's the corn syrup, and it's usually cheap GMO corn that they're using for that. But the corn syrup, the high fructose or any kind of fructose that is not in a natural fruit, it's totally different if it's processed and chemically, treated, or anyway, it affects our body differently. And so there's such a diabetes has risen 700% in the last 50 years. Well, a lot of it is this chemical, these sweeteners. They affect our bodies very differently. And the high fructose corn syrup or the fructose, you know, even agave syrup has more fructose in it than high fructose corn syrup. But what that does is it affects our pancreas's ability to make insulin. And it affects our hormones, and the way it affects our pancreas, it actually is one of the leading reasons there is such high diabetes in our country. And so if people can keep that out of their diet, that is critical. And, you know, most of the processed foods have that. But, you know, I would say to anybody listening, take your reading classes, read those ingredient labels. If it's processed and it has any kind of fructose in it or monosodium glutamate or MSG or any of those things, or just listing things that are not food on the label, you know, and read how much sugar is in there, you know, don't buy it. It is one teaspoon of sugar will shut down your immune system for 5 hours. And so, you know, we need to keep the sugar out of our diet. It's the sugar that's really harming our health and making us have so many weight problems and disease problems in so many of these processed foods. That's really what it is. And then, and of course, I would say don't microwave it. Don't microwave anything healthy because it's going to destroy the molecular structure of the food, and it's also going to destroy the nutrient value. So don't waste your money on good food and then microwave it. So, you know, I talk about a lot of this in my books and I explain why, but diabetes in your diet really walks you through a lot of the different components in processed foods and how you can avoid them. And it's very simple, but, you know, spending your money on this as compared to that, and if this is, you know, going to restore your health and that's not, you're going to save money in the long run, you know, not being sick and not, you know, having to go to the doctor and not, you know, not being able to go to work or school.
Exactly.
And so many of these foods, you know, you want to go to the farmers markets, get fresh in season food because it's going to be less expensive. And
that's a good tip.
I guess we could do a whole nother show on all of this. Because I could go on for a long time and expand on all of this.
Okay. And, well, I'll encourage listeners to go to your website and check out your books. Maybe they're going to buy one of your books or they want to go to one of your conferences. The one thing I was going to say about your form that I really liked was, you know, it asks so much more, like, you know, it's not just the impersonal questions when you go to a regular doctor. And like one of your questions, I thought, what percentage of food is home cooked? You know, that's something. And then where do you get the rest of your food from if it's not, you know, that's an important question to ask. And, you know, I thought I'd have to think about that and figure out what percentage of food is home cooked. And my husband does cook a lot, but then when I'm gone a lot, I tend to eat out a lot. And then asking about, do you sleep? And just, you have a lot of questions on here that I think are really important. I knew I had looked at that form. So I think that's good that you're looking at the whole body instead of like, you know, you go to the doctor, oh, I don't, you know, and they just like treat the one symptom. So,
well, and they're not taught nutrition in medical school. So they don't even go into that component. And that's why so many doctors refer their clients to me for their nutritional counseling is, you know, the doctors will say, well, you know, I didn't learn any of that in medical school. And I'm realizing now that that's important. Really, all we were taught was how to use pharmaceutical drugs. And so it's, you know, we need doctors. I know they, you know, I work with a lot of them that are just magnificent. And, you know, you have a broken arm, you need somebody to help you fix it. But, you know, I think in many ways we can help ourselves be healthier and possibly avoid being ill or having chronic disease if we do just kind of take control of our health and what we put in our mouth and, you know, how we hydrate and the quality of our food. And I really do believe it's easier than people think and it makes sense. And, you know, a lot of times it doesn't even really cost you anything to make some of these adjustments. It's just, you know, doing things a little differently. And, you know, sometimes change isn't always so easy for people because it kind of is going outside of the realm of, you know, what we've always been doing. And sometimes we'll be doing something and even though it doesn't serve us, we keep doing it because it's familiar. And because it's familiar, you know, it's, you know kind of what to expect. But if it's not working, then, you know, making that change can be a little scary. But once you start making that change, and it's really just making that choice to make a change, if you keep doing it, then that becomes familiar and it becomes easier. And before you know it, you're doing it, feeling better, and you don't even have to think about it anymore. So it's, you know, it's just a process.
Absolutely. I've been reading Tony Robbins' book. What is it? Something about bringing out the greatness in you or something. And he talks a lot about that, the associations between pain and pleasure and just kind of tricking your mind into associating pain with things and like figuring out where, you know, where did you get those associations to begin with? And that's how you can take control of your life. So I think you're a great, resource for that and helping people figure those things out for themselves. So do you want to tell listeners how to connect with you?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I mean, you can contact me on my website, Organic Healthy Life, LIFE.com. And I've got my books there and I have recommended products. You can sign up for my free newsletter and the banner. It just comes out once a month and I don't spam or share your email. And I have my radio shows. Organic Healthy Lifestyle is on iHeartRadio, or my podcast, Organic Healthy Life, on iTunes. And I love connecting with people. I have an author page on Facebook, Nancy Addison, Organic Healthy Life. And I'd love to hear from you. And I love your questions. And I just love connecting with people all over the world. It just makes my life worth living, and I find it such a joy.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. And I'll bet listeners will check out your podcast or your radio show, and they'll be excited to learn more. And just have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure being here.
Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like the other green future growers. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast/book or type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get listening to your first audiobook today. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow local.